A fishing float drops into calm water. It's attached to a rod held by a small boy perched in the curve of a crescent moon that becomes the D of DreamWorks. DreamWorks Pictures presents. A teenage girl looks directly into a handheld camera.
I need a father who's a role model. Not some horny geek boy who's gonna spray shorts whenever I bring a girlfriend home from school. What a lame-o. Someone really should just put him out of his misery.
Want me to kill him for you?
The girl sits up in bed, her long black hair draped over her shoulder.
Yeah. Would you?
American Beauty. Now, flying above an ordinary leafy suburb of America.
My name is Lester Burnham. This is my neighborhood. This is my street. This is my life. I'm 42 years old. In less than a year, I'll be dead.
Lester turns off his alarm.
Of course, I don't know that yet.
He rolls onto his back.
And in a way, I'm dead already.
He slips his feet into a pair of slippers. Later, in the shower, he positions his face under the jets of steaming hot water.
Look at me, jerking off in the shower. This will be the high point of my day. It's all downhill from here.
A well-maintained woman cuts the stem of a red rose.
That's my wife, Carolyn. See the way the handle on those pruning shears matches her gardening clogs? That's not an accident.
Hush, Betsy. Hush, what is wrong?
That's our next-door neighbor, Jim. And that's his lover, Jim.
You spoil her. Bitsy?
Me?
No bark. Come inside now. Come on. Yes.
Good morning, Jim.
Inside. Morning, Carolyn.
I love your tie, that color.
I just love your roses. How do you get them to flourish like this?
Well, I'll tell you. Eggshells and Miracle-Gro.
I've never heard of that.
Man, I get exhausted just watching her. She wasn't always like this. She used to be happy. We used to be happy.
The teenage girl from earlier.
My daughter Jane. Only child.
She's researching breast augmentation.
Janie's a pretty typical teenager. Angry, insecure, confused. I wish I could tell her that's all going to pass. But I don't want to lie to her.
Carolyn honks the horn impatiently.
Jane, honey, are you trying to look unattractive?
Yes.
Congratulations, you've succeeded admirably. Lester, could you make me a little later, please? Because I'm not quite late enough.
Files spill from his briefcase.
Nice going, Dad.
Both my wife and daughter think I'm this gigantic loser. And they're right. I have lost something. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I know I didn't always feel this sedated. But you know what? It's never too late to get it back.
Hello, this is Lester Burnham from Media Monthly Magazine. I'm calling for Mr. Tamlin, please. Well, we're all under a deadline here. See, there's some basic information about your product launch that isn't even covered in your press release, and I... Yeah. Okay. Can I ask you a question? Who is Tamlin? Does he exist? Because he doesn't ever seem to come in. Yeah, okay, I'll leave my number. It's 555-0199. Lester Burnham. Thank you.
Hey, Les. You got a minute?
For you, Brad, I got five.
So, yeah, I'm sure you can understand our need to cut corners around here.
Oh, sure, yeah. Times are tight, you gotta free up some cash. You gotta spend money to make money, right?
Exactly.
Like the time that Mr. Flournoy used the company MasterCard to pay for that hooker, and then she used the card numbers and stayed at the St. Regis for, what was it, like 3 months?
That's unsubstantiated gossip.
That's $50,000. That's somebody's salary. That's somebody who's going to get fired because Craig has to pay women to fuck him.
Jesus. I mean, calm down. Nobody's getting fired yet. That's why we're having everyone write out a job description, mapping out in detail how they contribute. That way, management can assess who's valuable
and who's expendable.
It's just business.
I've been writing for this magazine for 14 years, Brad. You've been here how long? A whole month?
I'm one of the good guys, Les. I'm trying to level with you. This is your one chance to save your job.
Later with Carolyn.
Decision. You just write the damn thing.
Well, you don't think it's weird and kind of fascist?
Possibly, but you don't want to be unemployed.
Oh, well, all right. Let's just all sell our souls and work for Satan because it's more convenient that way.
Oh, could you be a little bit more dramatic, please, huh? So, we finally got new neighbors. You know, if the Lomans had let me represent them instead of the real estate king, that house would never have sat on the market for 6 months.
Well, they were still mad at you for cutting down their sycamore.
Their sycamore? Come on, a substantial portion of the root structure was on our property. You know that. How can you call it their sycamore? I wouldn't have the heart to just cut down something if it wasn't partially mine, which of course it was.
Now a series of framed family photographs displayed on ornamental tables. The dinner table is beautifully laid with perfectly placed candles.
Mom, do we always have to listen to this elevator music?
No. No, we don't. And as soon as you've prepared a nutritious yet savory meal that I'm about to eat, you can listen to whatever you like.
So, Janie, how was school?
It was okay.
Just okay?
No, Dad. It was spectacular.
Well, you want to know how things went in my job today? They've hired this efficiency expert, this really friendly guy named Brad. How perfect is that? And he's basically there to make it seem like they're justified in firing somebody because they couldn't just come right out and say that, could they? No, no, that would just be too honest. And so they've asked us, you couldn't possibly care less, could you?
Well, what do you expect? You can't all of a sudden be my best friend just because you had a bad day. I mean, hello. Barely even spoken to me for months.
As Jane leaves the room, Carolyn raises her glass and gives him a smug look.
Oh, what? Your mother of the year? You treat her like an employee.
What? What?
I'm gonna get some ice cream.
He heads out and joins Jane at the sink in the gleaming kitchen.
Jamie, I'm sorry I haven't been more available. You know, you don't always have to wait for me to come to you.
Oh, great. So now it's my fault?
I didn't say that. It's nobody's fault. Jamie, what happened? We used to be pals.
As the two of them talk, someone is filming them from outside. A young man is standing in darkness, his face dimly illuminated by the small screen on the side of his video camera. As Jane leaves the room, his camera follows her, then reverts back to Lester, who turns to the sink, muttering to himself. Lester starts washing the dishes. He sighs, with a look of discontentment on his face. The intense young man lowers his camera and stares at Lester before moving away. Sensing something, Lester stops what he's doing and peers out into the darkness. Seeing nothing, he wipes his hands on a tea towel and throws it down onto the counter. It lands next to a black and white photo, showing the family happy, with Jane aged about 5. The next day, Carolyn hangs an open house today sign under an estate agent's board. She wedges a blue and white flag into the ground, then lifts a crate out of her car boot. She stops to look at a large board driven into the lawn opposite. It's advertising Buddy Kane, the king of real estate, a handsome man with greying hair. Carolyn looks disheartened. Moments later, with a flourish, she opens the double doors.
I will sell this house today.
She sets out some literature about Burnham and Associates, then unzips her camel-coloured shift dress and sets about cleaning the windows in her red silk slip.
I will sell this house today. I will sell this house today.
She scrubs the tiled kitchen counter, then begins to dust a ceiling-mounted fan, sneezing as dirt falls into her face. She hoovers, then later, back in her suit, applies a layer of lipstick.
I will sell this house today.
She rubs a spot off the mirror. Later, she throws open the front doors of the house.
Welcome. I'm Carolyn Burnham. This living room is very dramatic. Wait till you see the native stone fireplace.
A simple cream could really lighten things up. You could even put in a skylight.
A couple look unimpressed.
Well, why don't we go into the kitchen?
It's a dream come true for any cook. Just filled with positive energy, huh? And you'll be surprised how much a ceiling fan can cut down on your energy costs.
Later, to two women.
You know, you could have some really fun backyard get-togethers out here.
The ad said this pool was lagoon-like. There's nothing lagoon-like about it.
Except for maybe the bugs.
There aren't even any plants out here.
What do you call this? Is this not a plant? If you have a problem with the plants, I can always call my landscape architect. Solved.
I mean, I think lagoon, I think waterfall, I think tropical. This is a cement hole.
I have some tiki torches in the garage.
Finally alone, Carolyn slides closed the glass door leading to the pool and closes the vertical blinds. Once she's blocked out the sunlight, she leans back and her face crumples in despair and frustration.
Shut up! Stop it, you weed, you baby! Shut up! Shut up! Shut up!
She slaps herself, then covers her face with her manicured hands. She wipes the tears away from beneath her eyes and takes a moment to compose herself. Then she walks out of the empty room. Now, at a basketball game. A player dribbles the ball, then passes it to a teammate who slams it into the net and hangs off the hoop. Jane is sitting on the sidelines with other cheerleaders. Her friend turns to her.
What are you looking for?
My parents are coming tonight. They're trying to, you know, take an active interest in me.
Rose, I hate it when my mom is in.
They're such assholes. Why can't they just have their own lives?
Lester and Carolyn are on the road.
Well, what makes you so sure she wants us to be there? Did she ask us to come?
Of course not. She doesn't want us to know how important this is to her. But she's been practicing her steps for weeks.
Well, I'll bet money she's going to resent it. And I'm missing the James Bond marathon on TNT.
Lester, this is important. Now, I'm sensing a real distance growing between you and Jane.
Growing? She hates me.
She's just willful.
She hates you, too.
Now, at the game, Carolyn and Lester make their way along the bleachers to find a seat. Lester falls over, then picks himself back up again.
Now for your halftime entertainment, Rockwell High's award-winning Dancing Spartanettes.
We can leave right after this, right?
The line of cheerleaders start their routine. Their outfits consist of black bowler hats, black miniskirts trimmed with white, and shoes decorated with pom-poms. Jane is wearing a bored expression, in stark comparison with the happy, smiling faces of the girls around her. The team dance in unison, making robotic movements, then march outwards to pick up the discarded hats. They form a line, then spread out into a V, leaving Jane's friend at the center. She's a beautiful girl with long blonde hair and a precocious air. As she dances, Lester stares at her open-mouthed. She looks up at the crowd, with her eyes seemingly fixed on him. The other girls fade away and a spotlight illuminates the blonde. As Lester gazes at her, the crowd disappears and she's dancing alone, swaying her hips provocatively. She turns and moves her body with fluid grace in a private dance just for him. The bleachers are deserted and Lester is bathed in white light. The girl looks back over her shoulder and tips him a seductive wink. Then she runs her hands over her breasts and crotch, closing her eyes in sexual ecstasy. With a knowing smile, she slowly unzips her knitted sweater, revealing a hint of naked flesh beneath. Lester arches one eyebrow. As she opens her jacket, a flurry of red rose petals flow out. In reality, the dance ends. Lester is sitting, wearing a stupefied expression. Later, Jane and her blonde friend walk out of the high school.
Shit, you're still here.
Janie!
I really enjoyed that.
Congratulations, honey. You were great.
I didn't win anything.
Hi, I'm Lester, Janie's dad.
Oh, hi. This is my friend, Angela Hayes.
Okay. Good to meet you. You were also good tonight. Very precise.
Thanks. Yeah, nice to meet you, Angela. Honey. I am so proud of you. You know, I watched you very closely. You didn't screw up once. Okay, we have to go.
So what are your girls doing now?
Dad, we're going out for pizza.
Oh, really? Do you need a ride? We can give you a ride. I have a car. You want to come with us?
Thanks, but I have a car.
Well, you have a car. Oh, well, that's great. That's great. Because Janie's thinking about getting a car, too, soon, aren't you?
Honey? Dad, Mom's waiting for you.
He gives an embarrassed smile.
Well, it was very nice meeting you, Angela. Any friend of Janie's is a friend of mine.
Jane narrows her eyes in disbelief.
Well, I'll be seeing you around then.
Angela smiles, and Lester scurries off.
Could he be any more pathetic?
I think it's sweet. And I think he and your mother have not had sex in a long time.
A deep red rose petal gently floats down against a pitch-black background. It falls onto Lester's face. He's lying on his back in bed, staring up at the ceiling with a faraway smile on his face.
It's the weirdest thing. I feel like I've been in a coma for about 20 years, and I'm just now waking up.
More petals float down onto him from a carpet on the ceiling. Angela is lying at the center, her pure white body like marble against the bed of deep crimson roses. A light smattering of petals covers her modesty. She smiles down at him lazily and unfolds the fingers of her right hand one by one. Later, Jane and Angela are sitting in her car on the road outside the house, smoking a joint.
I'm so sorry my dad was weird tonight.
It's okay. I'm used to guys drooling over me. It started when I was about 12. I'd go to dinner with my parents. Every Thursday night, Red Lobster. And every guy there would stare at me when I walked in. And I knew what they were thinking. Just like I knew guys at school thought about me when they jerked off.
Vomit?
No, I liked it. And I still like it. If people I don't even know look at me and want to fuck me, it means I really have a shot at being a model. Which is great. Because there's nothing worse in life than being ordinary.
Jane looks deflated.
I really think it'll happen for you.
I know. Because everything that was meant to happen does. Eventually.
As Jane gets out of the car and walks towards her house, she's being filmed from the other side of a white picket fence separating the neighbouring properties. She stops and looks directly into the camera. The intense young man stands up and turns on the porch light of the house next door so he's visible.
Asshole.
He continues to film her, so she gives him the finger and heads inside. She leans back against the front door, then drops her school bag and makes her way stealthily into the dining room. She turns out a side light, then parts the white net curtains and looks across at the neighbouring porch. The light is still on, but the boy has disappeared. Jane turns her back to the window, then allows herself a secret smile. Now, someone opens up an address book and turns to the page dedicated to the letter H. Lester runs his finger under Angela's name and number. He picks up the phone and starts to dial, glancing over his shoulder at the ensuite bathroom door in Jane's room. He quickly hangs up and saunters out into the hallway just as Jane emerges from the bathroom, rubbing her wet hair with a towel.
Hello?
Why'd you call me?
I didn't.
Well, my phone just rang and I answered it and somebody hung up and I star 69 and I called you back.
Well, I was in the shower.
Jane picks up her open address book.
Oh, gross.
She looks around suspiciously, unaware that she's being filmed from next door. The young man is standing at the window bolt upright, with his camera trained closely on Jane.
Ricky, breakfast?
Be right there.
Downstairs, a middle-aged woman flips sizzling rashers of bacon in a pan.
Hello.
I don't eat bacon, remember?
I'm sorry, I must have forgotten.
Ricky helps himself to eggs, then sits down opposite his father, who's reading the paper. His father's wearing dark-rimmed glasses and has a crew-cut hairdo.
What's new in the world, Dad?
This country is going straight to hell.
They look astonished by the sound of the doorbell.
Are you expecting anyone?
No.
There is an awkward silence.
No.
Ricky's father folds up his newspaper and answers the front door to Jim and Jim.
Hi.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
Just a little something from our garden.
Except for the pasta, we got that at Falacci's.
Right. It's unbelievably fresh. You drop it in the water and it's done. Jim Ohlmeyer. Two doors down. Welcome to the neighborhood.
Colonel Frank Fitz, U.S. Marine Corps.
It's nice to meet you.
This is my partner.
Jim Berkeley, but people call me JB.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
Nothing. We just wanted to say hi to our new neighbors.
Yeah. But you said your partner, so what's your business?
Well, he is a tax attorney.
And he's an anesthesiologist.
Frank's face freezes. Later, Ricky's working something out on a calculator in the passenger seat of his car.
How come these faggots always have to rub it in your face? How can they be so shameless?
It's the whole thing, Dad. They don't feel that's anything to be ashamed of.
Well, it is.
Yeah, you're right.
Don't placate me like I'm your mother, boy.
Forgive me, sir, for speaking so bluntly. Those fags make me want to puke my fucking guts out.
Ricky gazes steadily at Frank, who looks back at him a little doubtfully.
Me too, son. Yeah, me too.
Now, Angela's holding court with Jane and two other girls.
I'm serious. He just pulled down his pants and yanked it out. You know, like, say hello to Mr. Happy.
Gross.
It wasn't gross. It was kind of cool.
So did you do it with him?
Of course I did. He's a really well-known photographer. He shoots for Elle on, like, a regular basis. It would have been so majorly stupid of me to turn him down.
You are a total prostitute.
Hey, that's how things really are. You just don't know because you're this pampered little suburban chick.
So are you. You've only been in 17 once, and you looked fat, so stop acting like you're goddamn Christy Turlington.
The two girls leave.
Cunt! I'm so sick of people taking their insecurities out of me. Oh my god, that's the pervert who filmed me last night.
Him? Jane, no way. He's a total lunatic.
You know him?
Yeah. We were on the same lunch shift when I was in 9th grade, and he would always say the most random, weird things. And then one day, he was just, like, gone. And then, Connie Cardule told me that his parents had to put him in a mental institution.
Why? What did he do?
What do you mean?
Well, they can't put you away just for saying weird things.
You total slut. You've got a crush on him.
What? Please.
You are defending him. You love him. You want to have like 10,000 of his babies.
Shut up.
Hi. My name's Ricky. I just moved next door to you.
I know. I kind of remember this really creepy incident where you were filming me last night.
I didn't mean to scare you. I just think you're interesting.
Thanks. I really don't need to have some psycho obsessing about me right now.
I'm not obsessing. Just curious.
He gazes at her unwaveringly, with a look of interest on his face. Jane stares back, then shifts uncomfortably and lowers her eyes. He moves away.
What a freak. And why does he dress like a Bible salesman? He's, like, so confident. I can't be real. I don't believe him. I mean, he didn't even, like, look at me once.
Now, Frank and his wife are watching a black and white film.
How'd you get in the Army?
Look, Sergeant, I got 3 reasons for being in the Army. First, I'm patriotic. Second, I love my country. And third, they nailed me.
And that goes for me, too. Listen, you two birds report to me immediately after this formation.
At the sound of Ricky coming in, Frank leans back and folds his arms.
Hey.
He takes a seat on the sofa with them.
What's going on here?
And all the way down, here comes the bull of the woods.
I'm sorry, what?
What's the matter with you, Twardowski? Don't you like our early morning?
Mom, nobody said anything. I'm sorry.
Now, Lester and Carolyn are walking into a function room.
Everyone here is with their spouse or their significant other, and Howard Lucar showed up with no one.
You always end up ignoring me, going out.
Now, listen to me. This is an important business function. As you know, my business is selling an image, and part of my job is to live that image.
All right, honey, do me a favor. Would you just say whatever you want to say and spare me the propaganda?
All right. Hi, Shirley. Listen, just do me a favor. Act happy tonight.
I am happy, honey.
Oh, that's Buddy.
Buddy! Buddy!
Hi.
Hi! Good to see you again.
It's so good to see you too, Catherine.
Carolyn.
Oh, Carolyn, of course. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Hello, Christy.
Hello.
My husband, Lester.
It's a pleasure.
Oh, we've met before, actually. This thing last year, or the thing Christmas at the Sheridan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's okay. I wouldn't remember me either.
Honey, don't be weird.
All right, honey. I won't be weird.
Okay.
I'll be whatever you want me to be.
Well, okay.
He gives her a passionate kiss, which she doesn't respond to. Then he smiles at Buddy.
We have a very healthy relationship.
I see.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I need a drink.
Oh.
Now, at the bar.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Put a little more in there, cowboy.
The bartender adds a second measure to his drink. Lester looks over at Carolyn with disgust. She seems to be having a whale of a time with Buddy.
Excuse me. Don't you live on Robin Hood Trail? The house with the red door?
Yeah.
I'm Ricky Fitz. I just moved in the house next to you.
Oh. Hi, Ricky Fitz. I'm Lester Burnham.
Hi, Lester Burnham.
Lester drains his drink. Ricky continues to stare at him, dressed in a white waiter's jacket and holding a tray of champagne glasses.
Do you party?
Excuse me?
Do you get high?
Lester's intrigued.
You know, I probably wouldn't even tell you this if I weren't a little tipsy, but I'm in complete awe of you. I mean, your firm is hands down the Rolls Royce of local real estate firms, and your personal sales record is, it's very intimidating. You know, I'd love to sit down with you and just pick your brain, if you'd ever be willing. You know, I suppose technically I'm the competition, but I mean, hey, I don't flatter myself that I'm even in the same league as you. I don't.
I'd love to.
Really?
Absolutely. Call my secretary and have her schedule a lunch.
I'll do that. Thank you.
They gaze into each other's eyes. Now, outside.
Did you ever see that movie where the body is walking around carrying its own head, and then the head goes down on that bay?
Reanimator.
A stocky man appears.
Look, I'm not paying you to do whatever it is you're doing out here.
Fine. So don't pay me.
Excuse me?
I quit, so you don't have to pay me. Now leave me alone.
Asshole.
Lester looks at Ricky in wonderment.
I think you just became my personal hero. Doesn't that make you nervous, just quitting your job like that? Well, I guess when you're all of, what, 16?
18. I just do these gigs as a cover. I have other sources of income. But my dad interferes less in my life when I pretend to be an upstanding young citizen with a respectable job.
Lester?
Lester hides the joint behind his back.
What are you doing?
Honey, this is Ricky Fitz. This is Ricky Fitz.
I'm Ricky Fitz. I just moved in the house next to you. I go to school with your daughter.
With Jane?
Yeah.
Really?
Jane.
Hi. I'm ready to go. I'll meet you out front.
She walks away, slightly unsteady on her feet.
Oh, I'm in trouble. Nice meeting you, Ricky Fitz. Thanks for the thing.
Anytime. Lester, if you want any more, you know where I live.
Lester closes the back door of the function rooms, leaving Ricky to smoke the rest of the joint alone. Jane and Angela are watching a dance video at home.
Shit.
They're home. Quick, let's go up to my room.
I should say hi to your dad. I don't want to be rude.
Angela hurries away, leaving Jane with a puzzled expression. In the darkened kitchen, Lester opens the fridge and peers inside. Angela, half hidden, gives him a provocative look.
Nice suit. You're looking good, Mr. Burnham. Last time I saw you, you looked kind of wound up.
Lester is dumbstruck.
Ooh, is that root beer?
Lester stares at her hand as she reaches out to touch him. In his mind, he replays the graceful movement again and again in slow motion. She runs her hand up the sleeve of his jacket and rests it on his shoulder. He stares at it, then into her deep, dark eyes. He gently cups her face and they kiss. Everything around them fades into darkness as they slowly turn on the spot. Eventually, they part and she steps backwards. With a puzzled expression, Lester brings his fingers to his lips and pulls a deep red rose petal from his mouth. Back in reality, Jane is standing just behind Angela in the kitchen.
I love root beer, don't you?
Hi.
Hi, Mom.
Hi.
Remember Angela?
Yes, of course.
I forgot to tell you, she's going to spend the night. Is that okay?
As Lester chokes, the three women give him withering looks. Now he's eavesdropping.
Sorry about my dad.
Don't be. I think it's funny.
Yeah. To you, he's just another guy who wants to jump your bones. But to me, he's just too embarrassing to live.
Well, your mom's the one who's embarrassing. What a phony. But your dad's actually kind of cute.
Shut up. He is. If he just worked out a little, he'd be hot.
Shut up. Oh, come on, like you've never sneaked a peek at him in his underwear. I bet he's got a big dick.
You are so grossing me out right now.
If he built up his chest and arms, I would totally fuck him.
La la la.
I would. I would suck his dead big fat dick and then I'd fuck him until his eyes rolled back in his head. Jeez.
What's that noise?
Lester runs away.
I swear I heard something.
Yeah. That was the sound of you being a huge, disgusting pig.
I'm serious. See?
She goes to the window.
Oh my God. Jane.
What is it?
Jane's name's been spelt out in fire.
It says psycho next door. Jane, what if he worships you? What if he's got, like, a shrine with pictures of you surrounded by dead people's heads and stuff? Shit.
I bet he's filming us right now.
Really?
Angela pulls open the curtains and waves flirtatiously, then starts to preen and pose, wearing only a striped vest and brief knickers. Ricky ignores her and instead zooms in on Jane's pale reflection in a looking glass. She seems solemn until a secret smile of pleasure crosses her lips. Momentarily, he stops filming. He's distracted by the sound of Lester banging about in the garage, knocking things off a shelf, until he finally finds what he's looking for, a set of weights. He starts to work out, pacing back and forth whilst flexing his arms. Then, he catches sight of his reflection in a window pane and stands still to consider it. He puts the weights down on a workbench and takes off his shirt, then his trousers and boxer shorts. His body is of an average build, with the suggestion of once toned muscles now slack with age. Ricky focuses his camera on the naked Lester, who stands sideways and pats his paunch.
Welcome to America's weirdest home videos.
Lester picks up the weights again and starts lifting them with a gritty, determined expression, unaware that his exploits are being caught on camera. Ricky zooms in on his face.
Ricky? Coming, Dad.
Locked doors in my house, boy.
Ricky rolls down the blinds and opens his bedroom door.
I'm sorry, I must have locked it by accident. So what's up?
Frank pulls a container out of his pocket.
I need a urine sample.
Wow. It's been 6 months already. Can I give it to you in the morning? I just took a whiz.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know...
Ricky stares at Frank intently.
Well, good night, son.
Frank walks away, and Ricky closes his bedroom door. He then opens up a small fridge and puts the empty container into a freezer section. He takes out a sample of frozen urine and puts it on a plate to defrost. Next door, Lester is lying awake in bed. He sits up and in a dreamlike state opens the door and steps out into the hallway. He silently pads across the floor and opens another door. A cloud of steam, illuminated by hazy white light, greets him. He steps into the room and peers through the steam. Angela is soaking in a bathtub raised on a low pedestal. She raises her head and looks directly at him.
I've been waiting for you.
He moves forward slowly and steadily, then kneels at the side of the tub. Floating on the surface of the water and obscuring Angela's naked body from view is a thick layer of thousands of red rose petals.
Been working out, haven't you? I could tell. I was hoping you'd give me a bath. I'm very, very dirty.
He very deliberately reaches out to put his hand into the bathwater. As he does so, Angela moves her exposed knee to one side. As his hand slips into the water, her eyes roll back in an expression of ecstasy. In reality, Carolyn is woken by the sounds of the bedsheets rustling. She sits up and looks down at Lester, who's masturbating.
What are you doing?
Nothing.
You were masturbating.
I was not.
Yes, you were.
Oh, all right, so shoot me. I was whacking off. That's right, I was choking the bishop, chafing the carrot, you know, saying hi to my monster.
That's disgusting.
Well, excuse me, but some of us still have blood pumping through our veins.
So do I.
Really? Well, I'm the only one who seems to be doing anything about it.
Lester, I refuse to live like this. This is not a marriage.
This hasn't been a marriage for years, but you were happy as long as I kept my mouth shut. Well, guess what? I've changed, and the new me whacks off when he feels horny, because you're obviously not going to help me out in that department.
Oh, I see. You think you're the only one who's sexually frustrated.
I'm not? Well, then, come on, baby. I'm ready.
Don't you mess with me, mister. I will divorce you so fast it'll make your head spin.
On what grounds? I'm not a drunk. I don't fuck other women. I don't mistreat you. I've never hit you. I don't even try to touch you since you made it so abundantly clear just how unnecessary you consider me to be. But I did support you when you got your license. And some people might think that entitles me to half of what's yours.
Oh.
So... turn out the light when you come back to bed, okay?
He plumps his pillow and lies on his side with his back turned to her. As he does so, a broad grin of satisfaction spreads across his face.
It's a great thing when you realize you still have the ability to surprise yourself. Makes you wonder what else you can do that you've forgotten about.
Hey, guys.
Lester, I didn't know you ran.
Well, I just started. Good for you. I figured you guys might be able to give me some pointers. I need to shape up fast.
Well, are you looking to just lose weight, or do you want to have increased strength and flexibility as well?
I want to look good naked.
Ricky comes out of his house. Frank is fastidiously polishing the blacked-out rear window of his car so it gleams in the sunlight. He spots Lester running with Jim and Jim.
Oh, what is this? Fucking gay pride parade?
Hey, yo, Ricky. My entire life has passed before my eyes, and those two have barely broken a sweat.
Sorry, hi. Lester Burnham, I live next door. We haven't met.
Colonel Frank Fitz, U.S. Marine Corps.
Oh, whoa. Well,
welcome to the neighborhood, sir.
Frank is unresponsive.
Ricky, I was thinking about the movie we talked about.
Reanimator.
Yeah.
You want to borrow it?
Okay, it's up in my room.
Okay, come on.
As the heavily sweating Lester follows Ricky into the house, Frank squats down and watches them suspiciously.
Can you hold this for a second?
Sure.
I don't think my dad was trying to come in while someone else was here, but you never know.
What is this?
Urine. I have to take a drug test every 6 months just to make sure I'm clean.
Are you kidding? You just smoked with me last night.
It's not mine. One of my clients is a nurse in a pediatrician's office. I cut her a deal. She keeps me in clean piss.
You like Pink Floyd?
Like a lot of music.
Man, I haven't listened to this album in years.
How much do you want?
I don't know. It's been a while. How much is an ounce?
This is totally decent, and it's 300.
Wow.
This shit is top of the line. It's called G13. It's genetically engineered by the U.S. government. It's extremely potent, but a completely mellow high. No paranoia.
Is that what we smoked last night?
This is all I ever smoke.
Lester takes the superior brand.
How much?
$2,000.
Things have changed since 1973.
You don't have to pay now. I know you're good for it.
Thanks.
Oh, and there's a card in there with my beeper number. Beep me anytime, day or night. And I only accept cash.
Well, now I know how you can afford all this equipment. You know, when I was your age, I flipped burgers all summer just to be able to buy an 8-track.
That sucks.
No, actually, it was great. All I did was party and get laid. I had my whole life ahead of me.
He looks distant.
My dad thinks I pay for all this with catering jobs. Never underestimate the power of denial.
Lester smiles. Now, Carolyn bustles past the closed garage door, carrying a truck and her pruning shears, and goes to inspect her rose bushes. The sound of music distracts her, and she sniffs the air, then goes to peer into the garage. Lester is inside, lifting a barbell. Her mouth drops open in shock, and she raises the garage door.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
Uh-oh. Mom's mad. Bench presses. I'm going to wail on my pecs, and then I'm going to do my back.
I say you're smoking pot now. I'm so glad. I think using illegal psychotropic substances is a very positive example to set for our daughter.
You're one to talk, you bloodless, money-grubbing freak.
She's stunned.
Lester, you have such hostility in you.
You mind? I'm trying to work out here. Unless you want to spot me.
Lester, you will not get away with this. You can be sure of that.
That's what you think.
My job consists of basically masking my contempt for the assholes in charge. And at least once a day, retiring to the men's room so I can jerk off. While I fantasize about a life that doesn't so closely resemble hell. Well, you obviously have no interest in saving yourself.
Brad, for 14 years, I've been a whore for the advertising industry. The only way I could save myself now is if I start firebombing.
Whatever. Management wants you gone by the end of the day.
Well, just what sort of severance package is management prepared to offer me, considering the information I have about our editorial director buying pussy with company money, which I think would interest the IRS since it technically constitutes fraud. And I'm sure that some of our advertisers and rival publications might like to know about it as well, not to mention Craig's wife.
What do you want?
1 year salary with benefits.
That's not going to happen.
Well, what do you say I throw in a little sexual harassment charge to boot?
Against who?
Against you. Can you prove that you didn't offer to save my job if I let you blow me?
Brad sits back and considers Lester.
Man, you are one twisted fuck.
Nope. I'm just an ordinary guy with nothing to lose.
Now he's walking behind a glass screen, carrying a box of his belongings on his shoulder. Yeah. Buddy joins Carolyn at a restaurant table.
Carolyn.
Buddy.
I am so sorry to have kept you waiting.
Oh.
Christy left for New York this morning.
Let's just say things were a little hectic around the house.
Oh, what's she doing in New York?
She's moving there. Yes, we are splitting up.
Buddy, I'm so sorry.
Yes. According to her, I'm too focused on my career. As if being driven to succeed is some sort of a character flaw. She certainly did take advantage of the lifestyle my success afforded her. Oh, wow. It's for the best.
When I saw you two at the party the other night, you seemed perfectly happy.
Call me crazy, but it is my philosophy that in order to be successful, one must project an image of success at all times.
As they both pick up their menus, Carolyn gazes at him with a look of yearning adoration. Now, at the high school, Ricky is filming the corpse of a white bird.
What are you doing?
I was filming this dead bird.
Why?
Because it's beautiful.
He focuses in on Jane's face.
I think maybe you forgot your medication today, mental boy.
Hi, Jane.
Look, I want you to stop filming me.
Okay.
Well, whatever. This is boring. Let's go. Do you need a ride? Are you crazy? I don't want to end up hacked to pieces in a dumpster somewhere.
It's okay, I'll walk. But thanks.
Yeah, see, he doesn't want to go anyway. Come on, let's go. Come on, Jane.
I think I'm gonna walk too.
What? Jane, that's like almost a mile.
Now, outside a grotty motel, Carolyn's car is parked next to a flash motor with the license plate R.E. King. In one of the rooms...
Oh, God! I love him!
You like getting nailed by the king?
Oh, yes, I love it! Fuck me, your majesty!
Who's the king?
Oh, you are!
Who's the king?
Meanwhile, Lester's on the road, playing air guitar as he drives. He's holding a joint between his fingers.
American woman, stay away from me. American woman, gonna let me be.
He makes a tight corner in a rain-soaked car park, then pulls up at a drive-thru.
What?
Would you like to try our new bacon and egg fajita? Just $1.29 for a limited time only.
No, but thank you. I'd like the big barn burger, smiley fries, and an orange soda.
Please drive up to the window. Thank you.
Smiley or Mr. Smiley's, that'll be $4.98, please.
A sign reads, now taking applications.
Would you like some smiley sauce?
No. Actually, I'd like to fill out an application.
There's no jobs for manager, it's just for counter.
Good. I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
Now, his interview.
I don't think you'd fit in here.
I have fast food experience.
Yeah, like 20 years ago.
Well, I'm sure there have been amazing technological advances in the industry, but surely you must have some sort of training program. Seems unfair to presume I won't be able to learn.
Now, Carolyn and Buddy.
That was exactly what I needed. The royal treatment, so to speak.
I was so stressed out. Ah. Ah. Mm.
Know what I do when I feel like that?
What?
I fire a gun.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I go to this little firing range downtown and I just pop off a few rounds.
I've never fired a gun before.
Well, you've got to try it. Nothing makes you feel more powerful.
They kiss. Now, Ricky and Jane.
So, do you like your new house?
I like it.
The people who used to live there fed these stray cats, so they were always around, and it drove my mother nuts. And then she cut down their tree. Is that a funeral?
Yeah. Have you ever known anybody who died?
No. Have you?
No. But I did see this homeless woman who froze to death once, just laying there on the sidewalk. She looked really sad.
They move to the side of the road and stop to watch a black hearse drive past, followed by the rest of the funeral procession.
I got that homeless woman on videotape.
Why would you film that?
Because it was amazing.
What's amazing about it?
When you see something like that, it's like God is looking right at you, just for a second. And if you're careful, you can look right back.
And what do you see?
Beauty.
Ricky's mother is sitting alone at the head of a highly polished dining table. The wood is dark and plain, echoed by the rest of the decor in the somber room. Ricky comes in with Jane.
Mom, I want you to meet somebody.
She stares blankly ahead.
Mom.
Yes?
I want you to meet somebody. This is Jane.
Hi.
Oh, my. I apologize for the way things look around here.
Jane glances at the immaculate room. Now, a rack of handguns.
This is where my dad hides out.
I take it he's got a thing for guns.
You gotta see this one thing. My dad would kill me if he knew I was in here.
Did you steal his keys?
No. One of my clients is a locksmith, and he was short on cash one night, so I let him pay me in trade.
He opens a glass-fronted cabinet and carefully lifts out a white oval plate rimmed with black. He hands it to her.
Turn it over.
It's been stamped with a swastika.
Oh, my God.
It's like official state China of the Third Reich. There's a whole subculture of people who collect this Nazi shit. But my dad just has this one thing.
Jane stares down at it with a look of disgust, then hands it back. Ricky carefully places it in the cabinet.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
No, you're scared of me.
No, I'm not.
You want to see the most beautiful thing I've ever filmed?
Now, the two of them are sitting in front of an enormous TV in Ricky's room. On the screen is a video of a white plastic carrier bag being blown about by the wind. Its random movements seem choreographed, as it drifts over a carpet of russet leaves.
It was one of those days where it's a minute away from snowing. And there's this electricity in the air. You can almost hear it, right? And this bag was just dancing with me. Like a little kid begging me to play with it. For 15 minutes. That's the day I realized that there was this entire life behind things. And this incredibly benevolent force that wanted me to know that there was no reason to be afraid. Ever. Video's a poor excuse, I know. But it helps me remember. I need to remember.
Jane turns to look at him, her eyes glistening with unshed tears.
Sometimes there is so much beauty in the world. I feel like I can't take it. And my heart, it's just gonna cave in.
He stares ahead, mesmerized by the screen, and Jane gazes at him. Then she gently takes his hand and holds it in hers. She seems to have taken him by surprise, as if he has forgotten she is there. He stares at her, and she half closes her eyes, then leans in and kisses him softly on the lips. She sits back and runs her finger across his chin, smiling.
Oh my God, what time is it?
Now, at the dinner table, Lester is swigging a beer when Jane comes in to join her parents.
Sorry I'm late.
No, no, that's quite all right, dear. Your father and I were just discussing his day at work. Why don't you tell our daughter about it, honey?
Janie, today I quit my job. And then I told my boss to go fuck himself, and then I blackmailed him for almost $60,000 past the asparagus.
Your father seems to think this kind of behavior is something to be proud of.
And your mother seems to prefer that I go through life like a fucking prisoner while she keeps my dick in a mason jar under the sink.
How dare you speak to me that way in front of her? And I marvel that you can be so contemptuous of me on the same day that you lose your job.
I didn't lose it. It's not like, whoops, where'd my job go? I quit. Someone passed the asparagus.
Oh, and I want to thank you for putting me under the added pressure of being the sole breadwinner now.
I already have a job.
No, don't give a second thought as to who's going to pay the mortgage. We'll just leave it all up to Carolyn. You mean you're going to take care of everything now, Carolyn? Yes, I don't mind. I really don't. You mean everything? You don't mind having the sole responsibility? Your husband feels he can just quit his job and you don't...
Will someone please pass me the fucking asparagus?
I'm not going to be a part of this.
Shut up!
Jane does as she's told. While Carolyn stares at him wide-eyed, Lester gets up, walks around to her end of the table, picks up the asparagus, then goes back to his seat.
I am sick and tired of being treated like I don't exist. You two do whatever you want to do, whenever you want to do it, and I don't complain. All I want
is the same... Oh, you don't complain? Oh, please, excuse me. I must be psychotic then. If you don't complain, what is this? Yeah, let's bring in the laugh meter and see how loud it gets on that one. You don't complain.
He hurls the plate of asparagus at the wall, then stares down the table at Carolyn, his expression cool and calm.
Don't interrupt me, honey.
Carolyn glances at Jane, who turns to look at Lester. He picks up his knife and fork, about to start eating again, then stops.
And another thing. From now on, we're going to alternate our dinner music, because frankly, and I don't think I'm alone here, I'm really tired of this Lawrence Welk shit.
Later, Jane is sitting alone in her bedroom.
Go away.
Honey, please let me in.
Jane reluctantly gets up and opens the door to her mother.
Look, I wish that you hadn't witnessed that awful scene tonight, but in a way, I'm glad.
Why? So I could see what freaks you and Dad really are?
Me?
Christ.
No, I'm glad because you're old enough now to learn the most important lesson in life. You cannot count on anyone except yourself. You cannot count on anyone except yourself. You know, it's sad but true. And the sooner you learn it, the better.
Look, Mom, I really don't feel like having a Kodak moment here, okay?
You ungrateful little brat! Just look at everything you have! When I was your age, I lived in a duplex. We didn't even have our own house.
Jane stares at her coldly, and Carolyn leaves, shaking her head, close to tears. Once she's gone, Jane crosses to her full-length mirror and touches her cheek, feeling the spot where her mother slapped her. Then she looks at her bedroom window and crosses over to it. Ricky is filming her from his room. Her image is relayed onto the small screen attached to his camera. She slowly raises her hand and waves. He returns the gesture. Surreptitiously, Jane glances over her shoulder, then looks back at Ricky. She stares across at him unwaveringly, then removes her overshirt. Ricky keeps filming her, the image displayed on the big TV screen behind him, as she takes off her t-shirt, revealing her bra. She pulls the band out of her ponytail, allowing her long dark hair to hang loose over her back and shoulders. Ricky zooms in on her as she reaches both hands behind her and undoes the clasp of her bra. She hesitates briefly before slipping off the straps and exposing her breasts. She stands before him unashamedly, the grainy image of her half-naked body projected on the screen.
You little bastard!
No, I just want
to... Get in there! How? Come on, get up!
Come on, get up!
Fight back, you little pussy!
No, sir, I won't fight you!
How did you get in there?
I picked the lock, sir.
What were you looking for, huh? Money? Are you on dope again?
No, sir. I wanted to show my girlfriend your Nazi plate.
A girlfriend?
Yes, sir. She lives next door.
Frank stands up, leaving his son cowering and bloody on the floor, and goes to the window. Jane quickly draws her curtains.
Her name's Jane.
Frank stares down at Ricky, who's bleeding from one eye, then sits down at the end of his bed. He's breathing heavily and close to tears.
This is for your own good, boy. You have no respect for other people's things and for authority.
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
Can't just go around doing whatever you feel like. You can't. There are rules in life.
Yes, sir.
You need structure. You need
discipline. Yes, sir. Thank you for trying to teach me. Don't give up on me, Dad.
Frank stands up.
Oh, Ricky. You stay out of there.
Ricky nods mutely, and Frank slowly starts to walk out of the room. As he does so, his image is projected sideways onto the TV screen by the camera, which was knocked to the floor in the scuffle. Ricky hauls himself up painfully and looks at his reflection. Both his eye and nose are bloody. Now, Carolyn is at the firing range, shooting bullets with a thrilled smile.
I gotta say, Mrs. Burnham, when you first came here, I thought you would be hopeless. But you're a natural.
Well, all I know is I love shooting this gun.
In her car.
Don't tell me not to fly. I've simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Don't bring around the cloud to rain on my parade.
Her gun is resting on the passenger seat. She waves cheerily to a bench with Buddy's poster emblazoned across it.
And if I'm found out, your turn at bat, sir. At least I didn't fake it hacked, sir. So what? I didn't make it. Nobody. I said nobody.
She rounds the corner into her street, passing the white picket fence lined with rose bushes, and swings into her driveway. She stops singing when she sees a flash red sports car parked up. Inside, a remote 4x4 controlled by Lester runs over her foot. She comes to stand in the doorway and taps her nails on the frame.
What?
Whose car is that out front?
Mine. 1970 Pontiac Firebird, the car I've always wanted, and now I have it. I rule.
Uh-huh, where's the Camry?
I traded it in.
Shouldn't you have consulted me first?
Let me think. No, you never drove it. Have you done something different? You look great.
She touches her hair self-consciously, then sits down.
Where's Jane?
Jane not home.
He pushes down the aerial of his remote control.
We have the whole house to ourselves. Christ, Carolyn. When did you become so joyless?
Joyless? I am not joyless. There happens to be a lot about me that you don't know, Mr. Smarty Man. There is plenty of joy in my life.
Whatever happened to that girl?
He leans over her.
Who used to fake seizures at frat parties when she got bored? Who used to run up to the roof of our first apartment building to flash the traffic helicopters? Have you totally forgotten about her? Because I haven't.
He tenderly kisses her neck and she leans back in ecstasy, then notices the bottle of beer tilted precariously in his hand.
Lester, you're going to spill beer on the couch.
The moment is lost, and Lester gets up and stands in the middle of the room.
So what? It's just a couch.
This is a $4,000 sofa, upholstered in Italian silk. This is not just a couch.
It's just a couch! This isn't life. This is just stuff. And it's become more important to you than living. Well, honey, that's just nuts.
Looking hurt, Carolyn holds her hand against her forehead, then hurries out of the room and up the stairs.
I'm only trying to help you!
Now, Ricky is filming Jane.
Don't.
Why?
It's weird watching myself. I don't like how I look.
I can't believe you don't know how beautiful you are.
Look, I'm not gonna sit here for that shit.
She takes the camera and turns it on him. He's standing bare-chested.
Hot. How does it feel now?
Fine.
You don't feel naked?
I am naked.
You know what I mean.
He sits down and looks directly into the camera, composed and unblinking.
So tell me about being in the hospital.
When I was 15, my dad caught me smoking dope. He totally freaked and decided to send me to military school. I told you this whole thing about structure and discipline, right? Of course, I got kicked out. Dad and I had this huge fight. He hit me. And the next day at school, some kid made a crack about my haircut. And I just snapped. I wanted to kill him. I would have killed him if they hadn't pulled me off. That's when my dad put me in the hospital, and they drugged me up and left me in there for 2 years.
Wow. You must really hate him.
He shakes his head.
He's not a bad man.
Well, you better believe I'd hate my dad if he did something like that to me. Wait, I already do hate my dad.
Why?
He's a total asshole. He's got this crush on my friend Angela, and it's disgusting.
You'd rather he had the crush on you.
Gross. No. But it'd be nice if I was anywhere near as important to him as she is. I know you think my dad's harmless, but you're wrong. He's doing massive psychological damage to me.
How?
Well, now, I too need structure. Fucking discipline.
Ricky films her as she lies on one side and rests her head on her hand.
I'm serious, though. How could he not be damaging me? I need a father who's a role model. Not some horny geek boy who's gonna spray his shorts whenever I bring a girlfriend home from school. What a lame-o. Someone really should just put him out of his misery.
Want me to kill him for you?
Jane gives a slight smile, then sits up and stares at him.
Yeah. Would you?
It'll cost you.
Well, I've been babysitting since I was about 10. I've got almost $3,000. Of course, I was saving it up for a boob job. But...
He zooms in and out on her breasts. They laugh at the image on the TV screen.
You know, that's not a very nice thing to do. Hiring someone to kill your dad.
Well, I guess I'm not a very nice girl then, am I?
Ricky zooms in on her until her eye fills the whole screen. Then he turns off the camera and places it on the floor. He gets up and comes to sit opposite her on the bed.
You know I'm not serious, right?
Of course.
They stare at each other. Then Jane lies back and Ricky moves beside her. Their heads are close together, and he gently rests his hand on her face and strokes her neck.
You know how lucky we are to have found each other?
Now, flying above the suburb.
Remember those posters that said, "Today is the first day of the rest of your life"? Well, that's true of every day except one. The day you died.
Lester emerges from his house dressed in black cycle shorts, a yellow t-shirt, and a baseball cap. He starts jogging down the center of the street, the gray tarmac racing past beneath his feet. His strides are confident, and his body is taut and toned. At home, Jane glares at him as he whizzes an orange-colored concoction in a blender. He removes the lid, then swaggers over to the counter and starts to drink directly from the blender jug.
Jane, hurry up. I've got a very important appointment.
Mom, is it okay if Angela sleeps over tonight?
Well, of course. She's always welcome. You know, I thought maybe you two had a fight. I haven't seen her around here in a while.
Caroline bustles out, and Lester becomes aware of Jane's intense stare.
What?
I've been too embarrassed to bring her over. Because of you. And that way that you behave.
What are you talking about? I've barely even spoken to her.
Dad, you stare at her all the time. Like you're drunk. It's disgusting.
You better watch yourself, Jane, or you're gonna turn into a real bitch just like your mother.
She storms out. Ricky is carefully brushing his hair when he catches sight of his father's reflection in the mirror.
You ready to go?
Oh, I don't need a ride. I'm going in with Jane and her mom.
As Ricky leaves the house, Frank follows him, then stops on the front path.
Oh, morning.
Yo, Ricky. How's it going?
Pretty decent, Mr. Barron.
Lester mimes holding a telephone to his ear and mouths, "Call me," to Ricky. Frank is watching suspiciously as Lester waves goodbye to his family. Moments later, he opens the door of Ricky's bedroom and walks inside. The white walls are lined with shelves on which are hundreds of video cassettes. He opens a drawer and rifles through the contents, then stands for a moment with one hand on his waist. He spots Ricky's video camera on the side and picks it up. He presses the play button, and an image of his wife sitting motionless at the dining table appears on the TV screen. He removes the tape and randomly replaces it with another one. This time, it's the footage of Lester working out naked in his garage. Frank stares at the screen, mesmerized, as the camera zooms in on Lester's expression of determination. Now, someone is flipping burgers.
I need that super smiley with cheese ASAP!
You need more than that, my little hombre.
Sandwich, curly fries, and a vanilla shake.
Make that two.
That'll be $7.98. Please drive up to the window. Thank you.
I think we deserve a little junk food after the workout we had this morning.
Caroline and Buddy pull up at the drive-thru window where Lester is waiting for them.
Smile! You're at Mr. Smiley's! Would you like to try our new beef and cheese pot pie on a stick? Just $1.99 for a limited time only?
We were just at a seminar. Buddy, this is my...
Her husband. We've met before, but something tells me you're going to remember me this time.
Whoa. You are so busted. You know, this really doesn't concern you.
Well, actually, Janine is senior drive-thru manager, so you kind of are on her turf.
Janine leaves with a smug smile.
So, this makes sense.
Oh, Lester.
Honey, it's okay. I want you to be happy. Would you like smiley sauce with that?
Lester, just stop it!
No, no. You don't get to tell me what to do. Ever again.
He holds out their bags of fast food with a bland look on his face. Now, Caroline pulls up outside the Top Hat Motel.
I'm sorry. I guess we should cool it for a while. Facing a potentially very expensive divorce.
No, no, I understand. Completely. In order to be successful, one must project an image of success at all times.
She fights back tears, and Buddy gets out of the car, shaking his head. He gets into his own vehicle, and Carolyn finally gives in and starts to cry. In the garage, Lester is working out. He sits up and gazes admiringly at his reflection in the window. His arm muscles are bulging and toned. He feels a bicep lovingly, then lifts a small box onto his stomach. He opens it up and pulls out his bag of weed, which is nearly empty. Ricky's parents watch as he pulls out his beeper.
I have to run next door. Jane left her geometry book in my bag. She needs it to do her homework.
As he leaves the table, Frank stares after him intently. Angelo is driving through the pouring rain.
So, you and Psycho Boy are fucking on like a regular basis now, right?
No.
Come on, you can tell me. Does he have a big dick?
Look, I'm not gonna talk about his dick with you, okay? It's not like that.
Not like what? Doesn't he have one? Why don't you want to talk about it? I mean, I tell you every single detail about every guy that I fuck.
Yeah, and maybe you shouldn't, all right? Maybe I really don't want to hear about all that.
Oh, so now that you have a boyfriend, you're like above it? We gotta get you a real man.
As the rain lashes down outside, Frank is pacing in a darkened room. He steps towards the window and looks directly into next door's garage. He watches as the bare-chested Lester gives Ricky some money, then puts his arm around his shoulders.
You got any papers?
Yeah, in the cigar box right over there.
You know, put up a fight, dude. You are such a pushover.
No, I can't, really. No, okay.
Well, you should learn to roll a joint.
Frank is still watching as the two men move about in the garage. As Ricky kneels down at Lester's feet and leans forward, Lester relaxes back into an easy chair and puts his hands behind his head. From Frank's partially obscured viewpoint, the image becomes ambiguous, as if Lester might be gaining sexual pleasure from Ricky. As Ricky licks cigarette papers to roll a joint, his actions seem even more suspicious to Frank. Angela pulls up on the driveway, and Ricky and Lester hurriedly stop what they're doing and make themselves more presentable. The two girls run towards the house, escaping from the torrential downpour. Slowly, as Frank steps back from the window, the faint light on his face fades away, plunging him into darkness. Now, in next door's kitchen.
Hello. Hi.
Where's Mom?
Don't know.
Hi, Mr. Burnham.
Hi.
Wow, look at you. Have you been working out?
Some.
Jane rolls her eyes and leaves the room.
You can really tell. Look at those arms.
She squeezes his bicep.
You like muscles?
I should probably go see what Jane's up to.
As she walks away, Lester looks puzzled by her response. Ricky walks into his darkened bedroom and stashes some cash in a bag.
Where did you get that?
Frank is in the corner.
My job. You don't lie to me. I saw you with him. You were watching me? What did he make you do? Oh, Dad, you don't really think me and Mr.
Don't
Burnham...
Don't you laugh at me! I will not sit back and watch my only son become a cocksucker!
Jesus, what is it with you?
He knocks Ricky to the floor with a vicious blow.
I swear to God, I'll throw you out of this house and never look at you again.
You mean that?
You damn straight I do. I'd rather you were dead than be a fucking faggot.
Ricky lies back on the floor and stares up at the ceiling, then closes his eyes and turns his head to one side.
You're right.
He pushes himself up.
I suck dick for money.
Boy, don't start.
$2,000, I'm that good.
Get out!
You should see me fuck. I'm the best piece of ass in 3 states.
Damn it, get out! I don't ever want to see you again!
Ricky's face crumples with emotion.
What a sad old man you are. Get out.
Frank stands sobbing, with his hands raised in a boxing stance. Moments later, Ricky comes down the stairs with a hold all over his shoulder. He stops opposite his mother, who's standing silently in the dark.
Mom, I'm leaving.
Wear a raincoat.
Ricky takes a couple of steps towards her.
I wish things would have been better for you.
He looks directly into her eyes.
Take care of Dad.
She nods. Then Ricky leans forward to kiss her on the cheek. Unresponsive, she clings onto a plate held between her hands. As he walks away, she closes her eyes and clutches the plate close to her chest. Frank is watching from Ricky's bedroom window as his son heads next door. Carolyn is parked up on the roadside with her hazard lights flashing.
Disinvesting problems of power and removing their ability to make us afraid. This is the secret to me-centered living. Only by taking full responsibility for your actions and their solutions will you ever break free from the constant cycle of victimhood.
She reaches into the glove compartment and pulls out her gun. At the house.
I don't think we can be friends anymore. You're way too uptight about sex.
Just don't fuck my dad, all right? Please?
Why not?
Dad, leave us alone.
It's me. If I had to leave tonight, would you come with me?
What?
If I had to go to New York to live tonight, would you come with me?
Yes.
You guys can't be serious. You're just a kid. I mean, he's like a mental case. You'll end up living in a box on the street.
I'm no more a kid than you are. We can use my plastic surgery money.
We won't have to. I have over $40,000. And I know people in the city that can help us get set up.
What, other drug dealers?
Yes.
Jade, you'd be out of your mind to go with him.
Why do you even care?
Because you're my friend.
She's not your friend. She's someone you use to feel better about yourself.
Go fuck yourself, psycho!
Hey, shut up, bitch!
Jade's a freak!
Well, then so am I! We'll always be freaks and we'll never be like other people! And you'll never be a freak because you're just too perfect!
Yeah, well... At least I'm not ugly.
Yes, you are. And you're boring. And you're totally ordinary. And you know it.
You two deserve each other.
Left alone, Jane and Ricky stare at each other with deep understanding, then wrap their arms around each other. Angela is sitting on the darkened stairs, sobbing. While Lester is working out, someone approaches the garage. It's Frank. He's wearing a white t-shirt and is absolutely drenched. Lester is oblivious to his presence as he performs chin-ups. Suddenly, he spots him and stops what he's doing. Frank is staring in, clearly distressed. Lester picks up a remote control and opens the garage doors electronically.
Jesus, man, you're soaked.
Frank slowly heads inside, dragging his feet almost against his own will.
You want me to get Ricky's and change me? Are you okay?
Where's your wife?
I don't know. Probably out to fucking that dorky prince of real estate asshole. And you know what? I don't care.
Frank's eyes are red-rimmed and bloodshot from crying. He moves closer towards Lester.
Your wife is with another man, and you don't care?
Nope. Our marriage is just for show. A commercial for how normal we are when we're anything but.
Frank laughs to himself and lowers his head. Lester reaches out and puts his hands on his shoulders.
Jeez, man, you are shaking. We really ought to get you out of these clothes.
Yeah.
It's okay. You just tell me what you need.
Frank is overcome. He rests his head on Lester's shoulder. As Lester comforts him, Frank grasps at his bare back. Lester starts to look uncomfortable, and when Frank kisses him, he gently pushes him away.
Oh. I'm sorry. You got the wrong idea.
Frank steps back, his face still wet from the rain, and stares at Lester in disbelief. Then, he slowly turns around and starts to walk out of the garage into the torrential downpour. Each step is faltering, and Lester watches him go with a sympathetic look on his face. Meanwhile, Carolyn is sitting in her car holding the gun.
I refuse to be a victim. When this becomes your mantra, constantly reinforcing your new
I refuse to be a victim.
She puts the gun in her handbag and drives off down the street. At the house, Lester helps himself to a bottle of beer from the fridge and unscrews the cap. He shakes his head slightly before sipping the drink. Hearing music from the other room, he makes his way through, the back of his t-shirt stained with sweat. Angela is sitting alone in the corner of the darkened living room.
I hope you don't mind if I play the stereo.
Not at all. Bad night?
Not really bad, just strange.
Believe me, it couldn't possibly be any stranger than mine.
She stands up and seems to steel herself.
Jane and I had a fight. It was about you. She's mad at me because I said I think you're sexy.
Do you want to sip?
Sure.
They slowly walk towards each other. In contrast to Lester's cool and confident air, Angela seems nervous and unsure of herself. They meet in front of the French windows. She takes the bottle from his hand and drinks. As some of the liquid dribbles down her chin, Lester gently wipes it away.
So, you gonna tell me? What do you want?
He runs his hands up her arms.
I don't know.
you don't know.
What do you want?
Are you kidding? I want you. I wanted you since the first moment I saw you. You were the most beautiful thing I have ever seen.
He kisses her tenderly on the forehead.
I don't think I'm ordinary.
You couldn't be ordinary if you tried.
Anything worse than being ordinary.
She tilts her head to one side and closes her eyes as he kisses her neck. Then the two of them stare at each other before sinking into a deep embrace. Carolyn is still on the road.
I refuse to be a victim. I refuse to be a victim. I refuse to be a victim. Lester, I have something I have to say to you.
Back at the house, Lester slowly moves forward, his profile cast into silhouette. Angela is lying back on the sofa, breathing heavily. He reaches out and runs his hand down her side, from her breast to her waist. In one fluid movement, he peels off her black trousers. He delicately places them on the carpet next to him, then runs his hands up her legs, tracing his fingers over her naked flesh. He caresses her face. Jane and Ricky are lying side by side on their backs.
Are you scared?
I don't get scared.
My parents will try to find me.
Mine won't.
Downstairs, Angela looks up at Lester wide-eyed as he slowly but deliberately undoes the buttons of her crisp white shirt. He pulls open the shirt and leans down to kiss her naked breasts.
This is my first time.
You're kidding.
I'm sorry. I still want to do it. I just thought I should tell you, in case you wondered why I wasn't better.
Lester looks completely stunned, then sinks down onto her chest with his face turned to one side.
What's wrong?
He sits back and looks down at her.
I thought you said it was beautiful.
You are beautiful. You are so beautiful.
He wraps a blanket around her.
And I would be a very lucky man.
I feel so stupid.
Don't.
I'm sorry.
You have nothing to be sorry about. It's okay. Everything's okay.
Carolyn is sitting in her parked car. The windscreen is completely obscured by the incessant rain. She rolls down a window and looks across at her red front door, framed in white and lit by a single lamp. Angela's in the kitchen with Lester.
Wow, I was starving.
Do you want me to make you another one?
No, I'm fine.
You sure?
I'm still a little weirded out, but I feel better. Thanks.
How's Jane?
What do you mean?
I mean, how's her life? Is she happy? Is she miserable? I'd really like to know, and she'd die before she ever tell me about it.
She's really happy. She thinks she's in love.
Angela looks disdainful, but as Lester absorbs what she's said, a beam of pure joy spreads across his face.
Good for her.
How are you?
He arches an eyebrow, then looks lost for words.
That has been a long time since anybody asked me that.
He considers for a moment, then smiles.
I'm great.
Angela returns his smile, then sighs and shrugs her shoulders.
I've got to go to the bathroom.
She leaves, and Lester stands at the counter with a distant smile on his face. Then he shakes his head almost in disbelief.
I'm great.
He looks to the side, then walks over to another surface and picks up a framed photo. He stares down at it, then pulls out a chair and takes a seat at the kitchen table. A bowl of sumptuous red roses are displayed in the center. He smiles down happily at the photograph, showing the family happy and smiling, with Jane only a small girl.
Man, oh man. Man, oh man, oh man.
He is oblivious to the barrel of a gun being held directly to the back of his head. A splatter of blood hits the white tiled wall. Jane and Ricky are quietly making their way down the darkened staircase, clinging on to each other. They push open the kitchen door, revealing a pool of scarlet liquid glistening on the white table. Jane steps inside. More blood is dripping onto the wooden floor. Ricky steps further into the kitchen, then slowly kneels down so he's level with the tabletop. He stares at Lester's face. He is dead, with thick streams of blood streaking his forehead. Ricky tilts his head and concentrates hard on Lester's expression. He seems calm and at peace, with his eyes wide open and a faint smile on his lips.
I had always heard your entire life flashes in front of your eyes the second before you die. First of all, that 1 second isn't a second at all. It stretches on forever, like an ocean of time. For me, it was lying on my back at Boy Scout camp, watching falling stars.
Ricky and Jane just before the shooting. They sit up on her bed.
And yellow leaves from the maple trees that lined our street.
Angela is wiping her eyes in the bathroom. She whips her head round.
Or my grandmother's hands, and the way her skin seemed like paper.
Carolyn is walking towards the house with her handbag in one hand and her gun in the other.
And the first time I saw my cousin Tony's brand new Firebird.
Frank switches on a light, revealing white gloves on his hands and his t-shirt soaked in blood. One of the guns from his immaculate rack is missing.
And Janie. And Janie.
Carolyn enters her bedroom and leans back against the door in a state of deep distress and shock. She opens a set of double wardrobe doors and stuffs her handbag into a laundry basket. Then she stares up at a rack of Lester's shirts. She reaches out and embraces them, then slowly sinks to her knees, overwhelmed with grief.
And Carolyn.
A younger Carolyn laughs excitedly on a fairground ride.
I guess I could be pretty pissed off about what happened to me. But it's hard to stay mad when there's so much beauty in the world. Sometimes I feel like I'm seeing it all at once, and it's too much. My heart fills up like a balloon that's about to burst. And then I remember to relax and stop trying to hold on to it. And then it flows through me like rain. And I can't feel anything but gratitude for every single moment of my stupid little life. You have no idea what I'm talking about, I'm sure. But don't worry. You will someday.
Because the world is round, it turns me on.